Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Brian.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. I was going to mention rally cars because I was trading texts with people, but it's been months since we've talked about rally cars. Mm-hmm. So teaser.
Teaser possibly. For 22.
Yeah, it's probably definitely going to have to be 22. We're running out of time in 21.
Not happening now.
As always, we're socially distanced. It's the only way we can do the show. We did it way before it was mandated. I'm still in the Midwest. Ross is in the Northeast. I was going to say on the East Northeast
coast. On the East Northeast.
I'm going to keep blurring.
That's a very Midwest thing to say.
Yeah, I'm team no coast. And Brian's in Oregon. So... We're back to the full spread, coast to coast.
We're bi-coastal, could say.
Dude, I was a rower in college, and I could row on either side of the eight-man boats, which normally the oar only goes out one side. But if you could do that, you were bi-sweptual, and it was the most, like, there were T-shirts printed. Like, anyone who's a rower who's been to a regatta knows this shirt that I'm talking about, because it's, like, their favorite rowing joke ever is, I'm bi-sweptual.
There's other rowing jokes?
There's a lot, actually. It's very awkward.
It's its own little niche.
Yeah, sure. You gotta remember, it's yet again an entire sport where everyone's wearing spandex at all times when you're competing. So those sports generally have awkward jokes. Anyways, the news.
Yep, that's a segue. Speaking of awkward, the Rivian R1T won Motor Trend's Truck of the Year.
So I... I don't really think of it as awkward. I think of it as like, if you paid attention to anything that anyone at Motor Trend said over the last 3 months, like,
yeah,
especially because like what's their last three have been Ram.
I think so. I'll preface what I said by crediting Dan Neal with the awkward, you know, word to go with it. But
is it awkward because they spent however many weeks driving Rivians across the country and then made it the truck of the year?
Like, huge number of marketing dollars to let them play with these things for a few weeks.
Pay to play these days sometimes. And there's way too much of that.
Yeah, I was like, every other OEM does similar. Like, they had a long-term TRX with them on the trip. Like, it's not like...
Oh my God. I saw three of those over the last 2 days, which is...
How do they look on tiny Connecticut roads?
This was Newport, Rhode Island, tiny Rhode Island roads. And I don't think the answer is any different. It's fucking enormous.
That truck is amazing. It is not designed for, I mean, it's totally designed for that clientele, but not that area. Why in the Northeast do you ever need, I'm from the East Coast. Like, Northeast, you do not need a TRX.
No, correct. Especially like these quaint little towns and this thing's just fucking roaring down. It's crazy.
So they're amazing. They're so fun to drive on and off road, but that's not the place for it.
Need to find some seat time. Where in the Northeast are you from?
Originally from Maryland, but I've lived all over the East Coast. I lived in Providence for a year in college.
Actually, oh, nice. So
I know the area well. Yeah. But the Rivian was a weird one. Like, it did get delivered this year. That's the one thing. Like, I run all the motors content over at gearjunkie.com, and we just gave it the Adventure Truck of the Year award as well, because it just snuck in, because they've got a couple hundred delivered to clients already.
Yeah.
So, and we had one of our contributors go drive it. So it kind of fit our criteria for that award, and it's a pretty impressive truck.
What were your other contenders for adventure vehicle?
We gave it a few categories. So we had like an SUV, the new Grand Cherokee won that. It's pretty good. I was in Moab and got to rock crawl that.
Oh, you went? Nice.
Yeah, I went to the launch, but also had the L before that in Vegas for SEMA, just around SEMA. I did a bunch of photo shoots, and I used that as my photo rig. And the L doesn't do much for me. I don't know if proportions are weird, but I do really, really love the Overland and the Trailhawk editions of the standard wheelbase one.
Okay, I need to find my way into the two-row, but the three-row is a great vehicle, even if the proportions are, in fact, extremely strange.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like they grew the ass and left the front the same.
You're talking about Grand Cherokees now, aren't you?
We're talking about Grand Cherokees.
Yeah. Overall winner, though, I gave it to the 4xe for 4x4, but kind of fit our overall. The 4xe, like, I mean, came out this year. It's fully available. The sales are through the roof. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really good vehicle. Like, I mean, I'm not a huge Jeep guy, honestly. Like, I don't want to own one, but it's a really good truck.
In the US, we don't have like electrified hybrid like tax credits, do we? Like, I know we have EV tax credits.
Not for hybrids.
So like, no. Why are they flying off the shelves? Is it just because they're...
Because Jeeps are flying off the shelves. Because regulars are. And it's not that much more. It's, you know, what is it? $2,800 or something? It wasn't that much more than a well-specced V6. And it just gives you huge... I mean, I could buy that and technically have my wife commute on it. She has an EV right now. And she goes 2 miles each way. Like, it gets like 20... I got 26 miles of range.
It's pretty good.
On all EV when I drove it at the launch.
That's like, Chevy Volt range, and thing weighs probably 50% more, if not even more than that.
I mean, you're still going to burn through tires and brakes and everything else, which is horrible for the environment. And it's not a smart move, and it's loud, and it's clunky and whatever, because it's a Jeep. But you can also rip the doors off and go mud with it on the weekends if you felt like it.
Yep.
Anyway, I like the idea of it. I need like 100 miles range. Like, if you can get me to 100 miles.
Mm-hmm. Why? It's a hybrid. You can drive hundreds of miles. That's like, true. Whatever. That's the key to it.
It is so much better than, like, what a plug-in hybrid used to be, and it's a Jeep Wrangler. Like, a Ford C-Max on full EV, I think I got 9 miles out of the full EV on that. Oof. And so, like, to have a Jeep Wrangler, like, and a C-Max looks like an egg. Like, it does not... Mm-hmm. Look good at all, but like the Wrangler can do 30 miles or 26.
The key to the plug-in though is I think they rated it 22 or 23 is their rating, but I got like 26 out of it. Definitely they underrated that, but it really doesn't break into the cargo room at all. It just the batteries fit under the rear seat, which does lose a little bit of room if you were to take the rear seats out and build it out or whatever, but otherwise like really doesn't change the vehicle. It's like what, 200 pounds more or something?
Yeah,
not much more fast in weight either. It's quick. Yeah. It does the job on and off road. Like it's totally capable. A Rubicon 4xe is just, I mean, it's a great fun vehicle for sure.
We had Scott Talon from Jeep on, and he really sold us on the upcoming Grand Cherokee 4xe. Mm-hmm. So that's something to look forward to.
My 30 number comes from. I have 4xe
32.
Yeah. That might be the
third. Yeah.
So anyways, circling back, the other finalists for Motor Trend Truck of the Year were the Ford Maverick, the GMC Hummer EV, which they're not even saying they're going to deliver until next year. Hyundai Santa Cruz. And I believe that's it for the finalists. So makes sense, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the Rivian takes out those other two. I mean, come on, like the Maverick's a cool truck. It's a well-built truck. It's going to be a good seller. The Santa Cruz is surprisingly good, but I don't know if you have been in one yet. Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I haven't even seen one. Chris has.
I sat in both of them. I drove them.
I drove the Santa Cruz. What did you think of it?
I thought the interior was a little more refined than the Maverick. I thought the materials were a little nicer, but the Maverick was much more spacious.
What trim Maverick was it? Because that also, from my understanding, creates a huge disparity.
It was not a good trim. It was a very low trim.
I haven't been in the Maverick yet, but the Maverick, the low end trim is like nothing on that truck, but the high end's supposed to be nice. I haven't been in that. But Santa Cruz, I was really disappointed with the interior. That was the part that killed me. I was like,
really?
This thing's awful. And the front overhang, if you go off road with it, it was not okay.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, like now we're starting to go.
Now we get into the soft off roader conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it doesn't need that huge cleft chin.
It does not.
So, like,
but you can, is it that's going to sell it because of the way it looks?
I think
that sells it. Sure.
Is part of it because of the platform that it's based off? Like, isn't it built on so the front overhang is basically the same front overhang as that truck. They didn't give us a brand new, same thing as that CUV. So this, they didn't give us a new truck. Like,
correct.
Anyway, freaking accountants. I still think they'll sell a lot of all of those. Everything.
Those are the Maverick. They're going to sell a shit ton of those just because they're cheap.
And the Santa Cruz, and from what I understand, the Maverick are both better than the Ridgeline. in my opinion. So
I love the Ridgeline.
Yeah, I think the Ridgeline looks better.
Yep.
Interior quality is even worse than the Santa Cruz.
Is it better?
Driving quality on road, for sure, the Santa Cruz is way better on road. Off road, they're pretty comparable, I think. The Ridgeline might beat it, especially in the new, like, I forget what they call it, their off road
trail sport.
Trail sport. Which gives you looks and tires, but no more capability. But we won't get into that right now.
That's fair.
It is trail sport.
Trail sport. Which on the Passport, they announced this week that it is, I think they said they're cutting the bottom trim Passport. So the base price goes up by what, like $4,500 or something?
Really? Is that just
a big number?
That's got to be because no one's buying the base one, and they're like, "Where this is, it's going to look bad in the marketing, but in actuality, no one's buying that anyway." So we can just
all new car prices are through the roof. It doesn't matter. The low number almost doesn't matter across the board. There's only a few cars where it really matters, and it's only in segments where it's super comparable. So on paper, it needs to be a comparable entry point compared to the competitor directly. Like full size trucks, they gotta kind of sort of be like, they'll juggle for that low number in marketing, but it's not actually gonna happen. Like that's just that truck they built two of a year. And it's like,
yeah, the 1500s, the cloth seat 1500s used to be like under 25, and now it's like, oh, that it's $34,999.95.
Yeah, okay. Regular cab with a manual.
Oh God, I wish.
Five inch infotainment screen.
Yeah.
Now it's vinyl seating, vinyl flooring. Vinyl.
Yeah.
That reminds me. Years ago, I was on a Ford Edge press launch, and they had a door panel, and they were like, it was like the XLT or the platinum door that they had in there. And some guy was like, "Well, what's the base look like?" And they were like, "Well, we only have this one. Sorry." I asked the Ford rep later, I was like, "How many base edges do you sell?" And she's like, "None." Like, that's why we did the nice door. Like, that's the one people are going to buy. Anyway,
I'm kind of surprised the Edge is still around. Like, never even think about it.
Yeah. I didn't know it was still around, to be honest with
you. Yeah. They're like, there's an ST and maybe there's a hybrid.
I literally don't know.
Now I need to go drive it. I'm like, this is going on my list.
The only Edge story. Surviving
on fleet sales and nothing alone.
Exactly. Nothing, it's a great rental car. Like,
yeah, for $300 a day. Anyways.
All right. Do you want to talk about electric Sierras?
Electric Sierra, yeah. We know nothing more except the way the front end looks, which is awesome. Exactly as you'd expect. Yeah, it's an illuminated GMC Sierra. I mean,
and the turn signals goes up and down in the little lights. That's all we know.
Yeah, the problem.
Oh, and the little hashes on the side.
The little hashes. It goes up and down like Knight Rider. Yeah,
which is kind of cool. The problem, and for the listening audience, basically they, you know, just illuminated the whole grill itself, which doesn't look like it's going to have any ventilation because it's obviously electric. So it's just going to be like a piece of glowing lights on the whole front end. How bright are these things going to be?
Right. You know, if they're smart, that's the border of the frunk entry point, right? It needs to have, I mean, there's not much truck sticking out the front of the thing. It needs to have a frunk. So hopefully, they're going to have to, that whole thing's going to have to flip down like a front tailgate. Cause otherwise to put anything in there, you'd have to reach up really high up and over.
I wonder if it's going to be like the Tundra hoods where when you open, or the 4Runner hoods, like when you open it, the hood and the whole grill goes up. Like,
yeah, it's like clamshell.
I think that's the light solution.
Yeah. Because only the Bollinger, I think, Bollinger, whatever you call
Bollinger,
it, has a front flip down tailgate.
Well, that also has the ability to then open something to the.
You go all the way through.
Yeah, it opens the cab. You can go forever.
Vehicle. Yeah.
They took the Avalanche rear seat and was like, let's just do that on the front too. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Midgate was fucking awesome. Stand by that.
So Bollingers are cool if they ever make them and cut the price in half. And I'll buy one right now.
Yeah. What? Supposedly, it's tangent, but that Ineos Grenadier or whatever.
Grenadier?
Russian thing. Is it Grenadier?
I think so.
I'm dyslexic, so
I don't speak French, so.
Well, it's Russian.
It's a UK company.
I knew it was UK. Yeah.
Product, yeah. Well, but it's going to be made in Germany, I think.
Made in Germany. And rumor has it that there's dealers that will be popping up soon.
In the US?
In the US.
Oh, yeah. They've already signed like 8 dealers or something in the US, I think.
Really?
Last I heard.
I read like 4. was like,
So
front.
I don't have a deposit on one, but I've been tempted to do it, honestly. Like, I think that thing's going to be awesome. Like, I know people that have touched it, and it's pretty cool.
The only question is, to sell it here, it's going to have to go through U.S. safety standards, obviously, but...
For sure.
How much so?
Why wouldn't it pass safety standards?
The first thing I read about it said that it was going to be low manufacturing numbers, and as such, they wouldn't have to do things like airbags to the
sanctuary. That was like 3 or 4 years ago, though, right?
When you read that 3 or 4 years ago?
It's been a while. They've been talking about this thing.
We had this thing called a pandemic, Ross, and made time freeze.
I'm pretty positive it has airbags. They're going for full U.S. like homologation, the whole nine yards. I think there's going to be volume there. I think they could sell, 15,000-20,000 of those easy in the U.S. I think a year. And they already got a truck coming too on the same chassis.
I had no idea that that's what they were. But yeah, maybe I'm just
that's what they're planning. I mean, it's vaporware right now, like everything, right? Like like the Cybertruck. Yeah, right. That's really happening.
Dude, my favorite was some Instagram reel this week. They were like, they made a second one. It's like it took them 3 years to make two.
They're already talking hydrogen now too. Hydrogen powertrain on it. They're really reaching
on the Cybertruck.
No, on the Grenadier SUV. It's all about keeping the hype, right? You got 3 years of us talking nonsense about it, and now it still doesn't exist yet, really. So they got to go, oh hey, the next thing, because we're future thinking, because this is actually happening. And I think that truck will come to market. I don't know U.S. or how that numbers, but it will happen. I think.
Inside is insane. It's so
ooh.
Look at the overhead switches.
What? I haven't seen that photo. That is
crazy.
It looks like an airplane cockpit.
Yeah.
The T-top looking pieces of glass on either sides of the window switches also look like they pop open like a bus.
Those look like manual sunroofs. Yeah.
It's like a sailboat deck hatch.
It's exactly like.
Yeah. Boop, boop, boop. Yeah.
They stole the vents off of Mercedes.
They did, and they stole the shifter out of a BMW. Road.
Shifter out of
BMW
a what?
Shifter. It looks like a BMW shifter.
It does.
No, it could be a Toyota shifter too. That looks a lot like the Prius shifter, which is the same as all the other Toyota shifters. Like,
right. Man, that thing is a trip.
Huh.
I'm trying to zoom.
I still want one. I'm not gonna lie.
Definitely.
Like, I think that truck for under 60 grand. I would probably buy it. And there's not a new car on the market right now that I think I'd throw my cash out, except maybe a TRX if I lived in the right area.
I mean, I live in the right area and I still wouldn't buy a TRX.
Yeah, it's true.
They're 100 grand, man. My friend's got one and he lives in Prescott, Arizona. Perfect.
Perfect.
There's desert, wide open roads.
How do you, I want to know how you design a truck that looks like 85% of a Land Rover Defender and nobody calls them on copyright?
There already is some of that, but if you look at it, there's what design feature on that truck says Land Rover Defender besides our primordial brains going, oh, it's a cube and it has fender flares and
the Defender. You kind of squared off the squared off fenders, but they're not exactly the same. Like the curves, like a Land Rover is a sharper corner where this thing's kind of curved a little bit.
Everything about it gets around any copyright you can think of. It's got features off FJ Cruisers. It's got features off of Land Cruisers. It's got obviously Defender heritage. I mean, the guy that's building it, he worked with Land Rover and tried to continue the original Defender for years, and Land Rover was like, no, we're not gonna continue that product. So he has a ton of money from the chemical industry, like oils and stuff like that, and he not oil but like oil products and other chemical stuff, and that's what he decided, okay, cool, I'll start my own and build it.
I just realized I'm literally clicking through the gallery and I might as well share it with people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think it's just something about the proportions that really makes your brain think like, oh, this is a Grand Theft Auto version of a Defender.
The hood is really awkward. The rear
hood is awkward.
A failed attempt at a Defender. And the front bumper is awful. Like first thing I do is rip that off and rip the rear tail lights and the front lights off and do something a little more flush mounted or something. And then I'd figure something out with the hood, with a graphic or something to like change the lines, because it's just a weird, awful shape.
It's like if you took a duck's upper bill and put it on a truck.
There you go. That image shows all the vehicles that they incorporated into it. Because if you look at it, like the hood is straight off the G-Wagon.
Yeah, yeah. It looks very...
G-Wagon, that long wheelbase, soft top G-Wagon. Oh, that's yes, so please. Good. Yeah.
Dude, they've got a Series 1. They've got a Willys. They've got an FJ40.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And a G.
Yeah, FJ40-ish.
And no Defender in the photo.
Oh, man. And there's so, that looks so Photoshopped, too.
Oh, it is. No, it's real.
No, come on.
This was an event.
Oh, yeah, maybe. If you look at that, where the bushes meet the vehicles, it could be real.
No, like it was, this was an event with people. Like,
that
oh,
was
yeah, real. The other cars are in those shots.
Yeah, they're in the, I'm just trying to get the one, see the G-Wagon sitting there next to it. Like,
yeah, but
the other cars aren't.
That's the FJ40 back there.
Yeah.
Then all the G-Wagon, right. Then this thing.
It looked fun. They Photoshopped it, or they did some interesting editing for the shadows and stuff. It just looks fake.
Yeah, they definitely touched it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the show notes, but I'm so glad we talked about it.
It's probably only the third time that's come up on the show, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, it's been forever since we've talked about that thing. So I don't really want to talk about any of this other stuff, Ross, because I want to talk about Toyota Lexus just being like, here they are. Because it's been forever that Toyota had any discussion of EV, et cetera. And then they dropped, what, 10? In a day?
I think it was like 14.
Yeah, it was more than that. It was 14. I think 14 is right. Yeah.
So, yeah, they kind of just caught everybody kind of off guard and said, here's our portfolio for 2030 to 2035.
Yeah, here's everything we haven't been showing you at all.
Yeah.
And if we want to talk about
14 prototypes of all battery electric EVs, like that's what they released. And it's everything from compact car to hypercar to 4x4 maybe to like Tacoma EV kind of thing.
To so, this one that's so heavy that they couldn't even include the bottom portion of the wheel.
I didn't notice that. But that one's real. That's going to be the Lexus version of the Toyota version of the Subaru.
It's the RX, isn't it? Like,
right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
The Toyota X4BZ, blah, 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 like horrible naming nomenclature like they all are. Yeah.
Oh,
it's terrible.
This one's the Highlander.
Yep.
This is the RAV4.
No, that's the Venza.
That's
the
Venza. Yeah.
Front's Venza. Yeah. And then they got the thing that the off-road community obviously is talking about is the Tacoma, which, okay, of course they're coming out with Tacoma. Why is this a surprise? It does give us some insight into the design language of the next generation Tacoma, which we should see relatively soon.
Yeah.
And it to that point, it kind of looks like they took the current Tacoma, the size, proportions, and shape, grafted on some of the Tundra's characteristics, and shrunk the back seat even more.
Which is what we knew we'd get, right? Like, I mean, it's exactly what we all thought we would get. It's like a little bit of Tundra language on the current Tacoma, because the current Tacoma, like, nobody complains about the looks of that truck. I'll complain about everything else about it, but the exterior looks like it looks fun. And then the thing that we're all
fucking love
about,
the Tacoma. Only thing I love more than the Tacoma is bashing on the Tacoma.
Too easy to bash on it. It's not, you don't even have to try.
it sucks. Yeah. It's
But the thing everybody's talking about is the FJ Cruiser looking like thing that is not. It's gonna be a Bronco Sport like competitor,
Jeep
a
Renegade.
Small CUV, Jeep Renegade, something like that. Yeah. So it's got it's like a Forerunner, or it's like a Forerunner crossed with an FJ Cruiser crossed with a Jeep Renegade.
Which will sell like crazy.
Yep. Yeah. Well, they'll sell that thing.
And it looks like it's small enough for them that like that's a global vehicle. Like that's home market, that's here, like that's everywhere.
But how much range are you gonna be able to pack into that and have any storage like room in the back? So when does that come out? Because my thought is that solid state batteries will make that thing viable and get you 200 to 300 mile range. But otherwise it's 150, 200 mile range vehicle and they're just for around town, which is where most people use it. But people that buy that want the like adventure experience or thought that they can actually go out and adventure.
Of course. Well,
hopefully they talk with Toyota too and make sure that the charging interface is the same as whatever chargers that Toyota is putting on all these off-road, or not. I'm saying Toyota and I mean Jeep.
Jeep.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Jeep is putting the solar chargers. They won't talk.
EV charging stuff's going to be like homologated basically in the next 2 years, I think.
Needs to be. You can buy adapters.
It's down to like two or three really right now that are viable. I mean, there's like five or six out there, but there's only two or three that people are actually using at this point.
Europe has standardized USBs, right, for phones? Don't they all have the same charging port now?
I think they went USB-C.
Right, but standard. Even iPhones, that's good.
I think so. I think you're right.
Where America, we still have iPhone and everyone else has USB-C. So it's just
lightning or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just want to point out on that thing, there is no third window. It's totally solid between the C and D pillar.
It's also a design concept. So
it's like the Adventure Pack on the Defender, but they just painted it and left it metal because it's tiny.
These are mostly clay models that were painted, and then they put them all on a single stage. The photo we're looking at is a full render of all of them, but they look like they did have physical copies of them at the presentation they did. The most exciting thing there for me, the real thing, is the two sports cars. I mean, they have a mid-engine looking something, but it's a battery electric, so it's not mid-engine.
MR2.
I mean,
it's where the battery packs it, so it makes it mid-battery.
Mid-motor.
And then they have a Lexus, essentially LFA competitor, that's like super low, sleek, big. It's kind of, it looks like it's next to what will be a battery electric IS500. Mm-hmm. And it's about the same size in terms of length. It's obviously a lot lower, but that thing, no doubt, is going to be fun.
I could have swore I saw a sedan version of the Lexus Supercar 2, and it didn't look like the IS500 version next to it. And I was like, that's amazing.
Did it look like a Lexus version of the Fisker Karma or the Renovo Karma? We'll call it the right thing now.
I was around that thing and I did not get in it.
there's one that still floats around my town, and it is like chrome. I think they're cool. Donks.
They're beautiful cars.
What is that convertible floating around towards the back left there?
It looks like whatever
convertible.
Whatever looks like an RCF. Variation, yeah, like
an RCF convertible. Interesting.
Looks like, battery electric 4-seat RCF convertible.
Dude, these things are like sport wagons. Like, what? That's amazing. That's
cool. I like
the Lexus. Lexus Taycan GTS Cross Turismo Turbo.
They're smart. That thing will compete directly with it and cost $60,000 less, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting
a Porsche badge on it.
Yeah, exactly. And you're getting Lexus interior, and it'll be great. Like,
In theory, Toyota quality, but we don't know how their EVs are going to be because they don't exist yet. Their hybrids do pretty well, and they've been around longer than anybody else.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The hybrids are actually very good cars. Boring as hell, but good cars. So speaking of Lexuses, Lexi, whatever, I want to talk GX460 because I just spent a bunch of hours driving mine, and you've spent.
So what, do you want me to leave?
Welcome to the Lexus GX460 podcast.
Exactly.
So
I own a Toyota. Can I be kind of cool?
You've had a bunch. You're part of the club. So I've had mine for 7 weeks.
Okay.
And I like it. How long have you had yours? It's an 18. Got it. CPO. Oh.
Right.
Yep. Wanted something that I could kind of start building and not have any mechanical worries and just, you know.
That's a lot different than mine.
So mine's stock at the moment and yours is not. So correct. Where do you want to go?
Mine, I got mine in what, 1919? No, I debuted it at SEMA 2019. So I won a top 10 like Overland Award at SEMA 2019 when I debuted it. So I bought it in early 19. So I built it in like seven, eight months. But it was built already when I bought it, but in not a great way. So I replaced almost everything. The rear bumper and the slider is the only thing left from the original build. I ripped everything else off. Suspension, tires, wheels, bumper, all of it.
So what was on it when you got it, and what's on it now?
I don't even want to talk about what was on it when I got it. It's just not I have a high level of quality for things that I build and own, and the rear bumper I still absolutely hate. I don't even want to call out who it is, but it's a complete knockoff of a Kmar, and the Kmar is the right bumper for that truck. The one that's on there is garbage. It's the lights have filled with water three times. They've kept sending new ones, which have been great. They've got great customer service, but the product is just not good. It's rusting. The powder coat's flaking off. The tow hitch receiver system is not good enough for me to ever tow with. I'll carry bikes on it, but I won't even tow a trailer. It's just not integrated properly. The swing outs don't really work that well, and there's a bunch of stuff. So I want to replace that at some point. Non-airbag one, so you didn't have to rip any of that out of it. I have it ridiculously built, way over the top. But I bought it kind of when things were getting really hot with that market, or right before. And I knew I worked with a lot of people on builds and things. And there was a bunch of people that approached me and wanted to build some parts for this rig, because there was not that many good bumpers out there. There was no good roof racks at the time. There was no good interior platform system. A lot of that stuff just hadn't been made yet. So I worked with a bunch of partners and I designed myself with them. Like the front bumper, my good friend and I 3D scanned it and the whole front of the truck, and then worked with Trail Ready to build that bumper. So kind of between their knowledge and my knowledge and my friend's engineering skills, we came up with by far the most streamlined, lightweight, and fully functional front bumper for the GX platform. No matter what, it's going to have a cleft chin look, and this reduces that as much as possible with a full featured bumper. So integrated light bars, swivel shackles, all aluminum body, stainless steel mounts for the shackles, full access to the winch, both from the top and from the front. Most of them hide the winch where you can't get anything. Still full cooling for the radiator, so tons of airflow through the middle, and an integrated skid plate. So it kind of combines everything. And you can option it with different light configurations. Mine's kind of decked out with all the light options. It's got an integrated light bar in the tubing in the top above the radiator.
I've never seen that before. That is, it's like...
It's not the first one with that, but it's the first one with integrated lighting and the best. It's clean. That's third iteration to make that's on my truck now. And it's really good.
How much does the whole thing weigh?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember. It's really light. The frame of it without the top tubes are steel. The main body is aluminum. And then the mounts for the winch and the shackles are stainless steel. So it's not light, but it's lighter than any other full featured one by 50 pounds or something. I'd have to look it up. I forget how much lighter, but
there's still not a lot of options.
No,
for
there isn't.
Front bumpers.
For a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, rack, there's some options out there, but I wanted a bigger roof rack. So I worked with a local company here in Portland and built a full crazy custom roof rack to carry adventure gear, kayaks, that kind of thing. It's got custom rock sliders on it that a 4x4 shop built in Georgia where I bought it from. So that part I did leave on there. They're welded to the frame and they're really, really nice.
Who did that?
I forget the guy's name. He actually really nice. I'm stoked on those. And then on the interior, I did a full custom everything. So I've got Shielman touring seats in it, and they're on a new bracket that's none of them had ever been done before. So I work with Planted Technologies to build a bracket that's appropriate for that. So those are the best upgrade in the whole truck. And then it's got a Goose Gear platform system in the back that's fully integrated and custom. So it goes, there's a sleep platform on the passenger side that goes over the rear seat. So I just fold the seat down, throw a little platform in, and I can sleep inside the vehicle.
Nice.
And then it's got a drop fridge in the back as well. So a full MSA 4x4 drop fridge with a National Luna fridge in it. And then under it, I've got Icon suspension, which is crazy, stage 7 plus bunch of tweaks. So it's really nice. I was cruising in Death Valley right after I built it at 65, 70 mile an hour on the really bad washboard on a speakerphone with my friend, just chilling one hand, driving down. It's so awesome.
Yeah. They make nice stuff.
135 pounds is what
135
Trail Ready front bumper for GX was listed at. And the best part is all of the product photos are Brian's truck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. And okay. I got to look again, but I don't think he updated it either. Cause I gave him really good photos. I'm an automotive photographer. That's what I do. And he used like his iPhone and he's not a good photographer. He's a great engineer and good builder.
Dude, like it's the right rear or the left rear quarter is chopped off.
That's funny.
Barely has all the front.
I saw that and like the first week he put it up and I sent him a full folder with every angle, all polished, perfect photos to update the website. So I did my part.
You tried.
If anybody wants to see better photos, just look at my truck on exploringelements.com and you can find all the good photos.
But he has, there's no post facelift 460 bumper. It's just for the 10 to 13s.
Currently that I think you can make it work. I really do. But yeah, it's definitely made for those. That's why I designed it off of my truck and the lines of the front, but not that much change. You cut so much off that I think you can make it work. I don't think it would be that much of a problem.
Interesting.
Dude, okay. I think one person's done it. Honestly, I'd pretty sure one person's done it on a normal one.
Yeah.
Cause the mounts and everything are the same.
So much of that grill.
Oh yeah.
Oh, great.
I have an approach angle instead of it being like a wall.
I know. I was parking this weekend. I was like, oh, I'm going to hit a fucking parking pot, like the little pylons. Yeah. That was as far off road as I went all weekend.
Dude, you got so much flex.
Yeah. What you can't see is that behind where I'm standing in this picture, where I took it, is about a 20-foot cliff down to the water. So that was as close as it was getting.
Take the running boards off first thing. Yeah, do it. They're just going to mess up your body when you go anywhere.
I got to chop them sooner rather than later. So
yep.
It's going to happen. So how many miles, like what have you done in terms of adventuring with this thing?
Yeah. So I think I've technically only added 55 or 60,000 miles to it. Not even that much. Only like 35,000 miles. I mean, the pandemic and everything, I didn't go out that much.
Drive other shit.
I constantly have press cars in my driveway and then go on press launches like every week. So it's tough to put time in on it, honestly. But I love it. So I've been to Telluride. I did for a wedding last summer with my whole family. So that was great. We took it up and over Imogen, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. I did that with like a cakewalk, even with a baby in the backseat, like no big deal.
amazing.
Two month old baby. And going over Imogen, I was a little worried about the altitude, but she was doing really good with it. And I just had to drive real careful not to bang her neck around. She didn't have a neck control at the time.
Oh, so
my wife like held her neck when it got rough.
Yeah.
Like it was that suspension and that truck. You just know how to drive well, and it's no big deal. But I've done that. I did a Death Valley right after SEMA when I launched it with my buddy Dan Greck. He was in his Jeep, his Around the World Africa Jeep. And
we've had him on the show twice. He's
cool.
Great. Yep. We love Dan.
Dan's awesome. He's doing great stuff right now in Australia. If anybody isn't following him, the road shows me, Dan Greck, go follow his stuff. But yeah, we did an awesome, just fun trip for the two of us, taking photos and doing our thing. We went kind of the back way through Death Valley, one of the last roads I hadn't done, from, I forget what they call them, the main sand dunes back across to Saline Valley Hot Springs. There's one road that cuts through the mountains and up and over. It's very, very rarely done. And it's got like a gatekeeper on the sand dune side that's not that hard, but it's technical. You need a lifted car. I mean, I'm on 34s on mine with the Evo Course wheels and stuff. And
what are they, 285 75s?
That sounds right. Okay. Like, yeah, I have to look that one up. It's been a while since I built that. I'm like eight builds in after that.
Fair.
ExploringElements.com, on the top there's a thing that says vehicles, and then it says GX460, and it has all the specs and all of the stories and links and photos and all videos.
I'll have to dig a little deeper. So before we get off of the 460, how bad is your gas mileage?
I'm lucky to get 12.
Oh shit.
I'm re-geared too now.
Oh shit.
And that helped. So I maybe, well, no, wait. So if I convert it because of the tire size and all the stuff, I think now I'm getting like 14.
Okay. That's, yeah.
It's horrible.
That's
horrible.
Pretty terrible. Yeah.
No, and it's not fast. Even re-geared, it's not fast. Like, it's not a quick car. Big old V8, premium fuel. That's the only downside to that truck, honestly. There's a lot of things that are great about it. The interior and the tech isn't really there at all, but it's fine. But the pickup and go and the fuel economy are horrible. Like, I want a supercharger. They don't make it for that truck.
Really?
Yeah, well, then you'd get single digits all the time.
Oh, yeah, but I'd have fun doing it. I'll take 3 mile per gallon hit and have the car that I can actually go.
Dude, no,
a supercharger, a lot of the time, the way I drive, I don't think it would hurt the fuel economy. I really don't.
Actually, yeah, a lot of the Tacoma guys who supercharge them, it doesn't really like change things.
Yeah,
the gas mileage is fucking terrible.
It's horrible. Yeah, I mean, it's like you compare it straight up with a 4Runner, right? Because it is a fifth gen 4Runner under all the skin and all the whatever. So it's a fifth gen 4Runner with a V8, a luxury interior, and a more unique body. You like 600 it or not? Pounds extra.
Yeah.
Well, that's the V8, or part of it. But yeah. So. But you can buy it with similar mileage same year for like, I don't know, 20-30% discount over a 4Runner. So it doesn't make any sense. Right. So that's a lot of fuel to burn. I mean, you know, I'd rather not burn the fuel for the environment, but like, that's a lot of fuel. You'd have to burn a lot of fuel to make, you know, 10 grand difference or whatever. You
have years of driving now.
But prices have gone through the roof on the GXs and the 4Runners. So the 4Runners have always been insane, but now GXs are nuts. Like, so I got in slightly under the radar before they went astronomical.
Mm-hmm. I got a good deal. I've been keeping tabs on things since I bought mine, and I still paid the lowest of any at that mileage and year. So
I've been tempted to sell mine lately, not because I don't know what I'd buy, but and I love it, I don't want to, but the value of it is so insane that it's like hard not to.
Dude, on cars and bids, it'd go for a huge number.
Yeah, what do you think it would go for? I mean, you've seen the thing, it's fully jacked up, 13 with 105,000 miles.
Knowing how much
clean Carfax,
yeah, I mean, probably 50.
I think. Photographed properly, cleaned up, I could get 60-70 out of it.
That's fuck mental. Ton of money. That's
over
a
50
lot
is
of,
mental
of
right like I mean to build it though, like straight up, like if you run like a spreadsheet and everything that's on that truck and the truck, that's $100,000+ build, like is the crazy part, right? I mean, we're never getting that back out of it. I'm not trying, but like I don't have any plan to sell it because I don't know what I would buy, and it's finally done. Like, I had Mule Expedition Outfitters up here in Washington dial all the electrical. It's nice. Awesome. Like, everything's labeled and shrink wrapped and perfectly run. There's not going to be a fire in engine bay. Like, this thing, it's got tons of accessories, but it's all through a Switch Pro system, and it's all fused and accessible and serviceable, and everything's traced. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, the only place you can really go is Land Cruiser, and then it's
200 series Land Cruiser. Yeah, I'm going to pay double for the base vehicle, and then I'm going to put this 100 or 60 grand into it to build it again. So why would I do? Like, exactly. It's built slightly better, but it doesn't give you much more interior room, and you still have the same slow V8, but you can put a supercharger on that.
So. That's true. So what's the story with the truck in this picture that Chris just brought up?
So this is a photo I just photographed. That's the mule wagon from Mule Expedition Outfitters. I just did a photo shoot on it for a bunch of magazines. There's a story up on Gear Junkie right now about the Ute Chop, because that's what they call that down under. Basically, it's an 80 series Land Cruiser with the back cut off, and it all sealed up with metal, and they put a MITS alloy flatbed and canopy on it, and it's lifted. It's got an LS powertrain, full custom interior. It's on 37s, I believe, full bead locks, fully locked, both ends, snorkel, roof rack, awning.
And Bluetooth. Perfect truck.
All of it.
Perfect truck.
It's pretty freaking awesome. Like, they're just getting it tuned now. They just tuned the LS, and like, it's built to the nines, and it's a really cool shop truck for them. And it's the owner's personal truck as well. So it's pretty slick.
Dude, Mule always has amazing shop trucks. Like,
right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you if you were them, though? Like,
Well, they started as enthusiasts and from the aerospace industry. So they built I think their first one that was kind of on the scene was right when they started the company, was a Vanag build with a full exo cage on it. And it was built like ridiculous custom bag systems inside, custom flip down beds. Like with an exo cage and like skid plate, it was insane and really capable. You look at it from the outside and you're like, wow, green Van Agen with like exo cage, like what? And then you look at the details and you're like, whoa, this is over the top.
So.
This thing's over the top.
The details on this thing. Rear winch. Oh,
the mule wagon. Yeah, they chopped the back behind the rear axle. They chopped the frame rails off and put on a new clip with a custom skid plate and winch mount. So it's got a front and rear winch on it.
The exhaust is routed through the rear skid.
Yep. It's clean. Again, slick. Aerospace That's and slick. Tech and like proper thing, engineering and thinking. It's really slick.
Yeah. Oh my God. Dual Toyo MTs mounted on the thing. Oh, it's like 200 pounds of wheels and tires mounted up high.
Yeah. That's for looks in the US. Nobody needs two spares in the US. Here. In the Outback in Australia, you need two spares. Here, not so much. But it looks really cool. So, and it promotes that product, right? I mean, that's what they just started. They're the distributor for MITS Alloy flat.
Okay.
So they just started bringing those in. So this is their first like company build with that setup. So it had to be over the top.
See those on the four-wheel drive action videos a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think the truck I see from them the most is is it a Stevenson?
It's Stewart and Stevenson. So the Mule Stewart and Stevenson. So it's a huge ex-military truck that they took the back and they built a full custom fold-out stage. So they use it at events. So they like the Northwest Overland Rally they come to for years, and I help run that event. So I've done many a raffle and different things from that back end of that truck as a stage.
Nice.
It's really, really cool. I think they might have sold it or they're going to. I'm not sure. But yeah, that thing's been around for at least 4 or 5 years now.
It's huge.
It's huge, huge, like massive. Yeah. Yeah. The bottom of the stage is like 5.5 feet tall, like when it folds up.
That's lightly terrifying.
Then my Google skills are slow tonight. Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That is an enormous vehicle.
Yeah. So those of you listening, it's a Stewart and Stevenson military truck, 4x4 truck. I think it's on like 41s with full central air inflation, the whole 9 yards. And this one was like, had a flatbed or something on it from the military. They took that off and they built this crazy custom metal, what looks like a radio box or on the back. And then the whole thing like flips open and creates a huge stage for events.
I was trying to get it with the stage open and they were so bad pixels. Like,
yeah. And, I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's a story from Northwest Overland Rally that I took a photo of that has it, but I can't point you in the right direction at the moment.
That thing's nuts.
Anyway.
Yeah. So you touched the LX600.
Yeah. Yeah. At the LA Auto Show, I got to sit in that and crawl around under it a little bit and check it out. I mean, it looks interesting. The exterior styling is definitely like, I don't know. The interior is interesting. It still feels dated. It doesn't feel dated, but you look at things and you're like, yeah, this is still a dated tech. Like it's not like a modern car. Here's my little interior review. I did like a 1 minute walkthrough of the interior.
It works.
F-Sport 500 edition. In front of it.
Oh yeah, totally. So like the materials are really nice, and this is the F Sport, so it's got like metal and carbon and cross stitching and red leather, and it's pretty slick. But when you really get down to it and like feel it and check it out, you're like, wait a minute, like this is kind of old technology and not really updated much. So I don't get it. Like bring me a. With this interior with less red and bling to it, belongs in a 200 series Land Cruiser that I can go actually off-road with. And we're not going to get that. That's not available to us.
So I talked with one of the Lexus reps, and I'm completely spacing on his name right now. He talked about a standard trim that was basically going to be the Land Cruiser priced accordingly, priced similar, but basically be
priced
the Land
at $85,000.
Yeah. Right. Instead of, So
probably 90 or whatever.
Probably 90.
I guess if you're getting into it for that price, and these would you think those materials that you were touching at the Land Cruiser price, you said feels right.
See, the materials and stuff were nice in this car in the F Sport. It felt like a Lexus. Like this was the sporty one, it's a little over the top, but it felt like a Lexus. Like the materials feel good. It feels like it's well put together. It's got good panel gaps and fitment and that kind of thing. It just, I don't know. I look at the tech and the screens and the things, like I've driven so many modern cars. I'm like, like this could have come out 4 years ago and people would have been like, okay, cool. You made it. Not cool. This is awesome. And it's new and impressive. But so to have this being a 2022 car, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm a Lexus guy. Like, I mean, I own a Lexus and my parents have a Lexus.
Beat a dead horse, but like the Rivian R1, the R1S, the Rivian, you know, at 75 or 80 grand is going to blow people away. And yep. I mean, the seats in this look really nice.
So this feels like a Lexus Toyota product because I there's not really a new Lexus or Toyota that comes out. And we're all like, finally, they jumped ahead. Like,
no, they never do. It's played
safe. They're always behind. Yeah.
But they try with the exterior styling. They try with some specific tech features. And they try with powertrains, besides being lagging on the battery electric front. But yeah, when it comes to like buttons and fitment, I mean, you look in this interior and these buttons are straight out of current vehicles. Like this is all parts bin stuff. So
it's stupid.
It's fine. It all works. It's just not. Like, I'm not like, oh, cool. I have to be in this vehicle and it's impressive. It's like, okay, cool. It's got all the features. It's all there.
you touched it though. It works.
It'll
keep working.
Speaking of things that work and sometimes don't work, but hopefully usually do, how's the Porsche?
So I bought my first sports car this year and it's a 996 turbo, an 01. I've never owned a sports car before. I've owned lots of adventure vehicles and things, but I've always wanted to have a sports car. I'm a sports car guy. It's funny. I turned 40 and had my wife was pregnant and I bought a 996 turbo while she was pregnant. So everybody flipped out on the internet. Oh my God, you have a kid coming and you're buying a Porsche. I'm like, yeah, I've been planning this for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
You technically fit a car seat in the back of one.
Not a rear facing car fleet.
I've physically
tried. It doesn't work. Yeah, it's awesome, man. I love it. This car is pretty unique. It's a 1 year only exterior white. So it's like a creamy white. Feels very 90s. It's not Carrera white. It's like Maserati white or something. I'm not pronouncing that right. But it's a 1 year only. It's the very first year of the water-cooled turbo. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, I got to look this up. I think in 01, this was like the apex predator in the Porsche lineup. I don't think there was any GT cars, and I don't think there was any like super hypercars in 01 because it's a transition between the air and water cooled stuff.
I think you're right about that.
Because 02, we got like a GT2. But I wasn't till 02, I don't think. So this car is a 1 year only and the interior is a boxer red. So, nice. But it's not just boxer red. It's everything is boxer red. Everything. Like not. There's no black accents. Like there's a black headliner, and there's a little. Even the carpets are red.
Are the turn signals red?
I think so. Like everything's red. Like the center console's red. The surround of all the vents is red. The dashboard's red. The steering wheel's red. Like it's nuts.
That's a lot. Good thing the outside's not.
Well, it's not what I would have chosen, but the two colors together work really well. It has a 90s vibe, which I kind of like. And I mean, it was designed in the 90s, but it's a unique color combo and it's not like super gaudy or weird, I don't think. So I think it's actually more valuable because of that. I've had tons of people like, I have to own your car. Here's my phone number. So like, I've been tempted. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent.
To me, a 20-year-old analog manual transmission car, like because I don't get that impressed with. Like I drive new cars all the time and they're awesome, but you know, 99.9% of them are dual clutch, whatever, paddle shifters, which is fine, but not as fun. I like the engagement.
So red.
Yeah. It's red. That's not even it.
That has
silver accents.
Oh my
god! Mine does not have silver. No, it's red everywhere. I think the steering column's red on mine too, not black like that photo.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's red.
Oh
everywhere.
My god!
Because I can find red steering columns, but I cannot find it without the silver accent.
You can't find it on the internet. I've tried. I cannot this is the find problem any with other 996 turbos with this interior. I can't. Like, and with this color combo, that's why it's like pretty unique. It's
you
kind
have.
Of nuts. Like,
the original window sticker. I would love to see how many of those pieces of red were options. You know, like
I don't, but I have the original code. And yes, it's all this car is completely stock original. It matches all the option codes, except this is tuned. So it has an air intake and some turbo somethings on it from EVOM. So it's got an EVOM Stage 2 kit on it. So it's about 500 wheel horsepower.
Holy
on
this shit. Thing.
Oh, no,
and
no,
it's
no,
got
no.
wheel spacers, because this car looks really weird without spacers. I hate wheel spacers, but like the tires are too inset. It's a wide body car, and the spacers I have on there are pretty mild. A lot of people go wider even, but I put PS2 tires on it.
I like it in the lineup. You can see the off-whiteness to it now.
Little cars and coffee surrounded by two Carrera white 991s and then a 964.
Yeah.
I forget which. Yeah. Red in the shot too. But yeah. Yeah. You can see how creamy white it is in comparatively. And the paint's in pretty good shape. It's got like two little nicks I got to get fixed up. And it's got some aging clear bra on the front of it. It's like sun bleached UV damage, like clear bra. But it kind
of. Oh, that's what that line was. Okay.
But it's in great shape. And it like kind of looks the part. It's kind of weird. I'm tempted to change it out, but I'm like, it doesn't look that bad. And it's kind of, I don't know, part of the car.
Period. Correct.
Kind of. Yeah. I kind of like it. Yeah. Like the rear. Also, the rear wing failed. And I put in the electric actuator ones, which are way better. Like they're cheaper than the factory ones. And they're never going to fail. The factory ones are just going to fail again in like 2 years.
Dude, it is not often we get to sit. I get to sit here and click through Porsche photos. I'm loving this.
Yeah. Also, it's very interesting now because like we've spent so much time looking at the 991s, and those openings on the front end have gotten enormous. Like,
yep. And yeah, this one's got like that stubby, like shark nose look, like that fish look to it.
Yeah. There was a GT3 in 01. I'm told by Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia.
'01, there was a GT3.
That's what it says.
A 996 GT3?
996.1 GT3, 1999 to 2001. It says, it could have been like a half year thing.
Because 99 was the first year of the 996. 2001 is the first year of the turbo. So the GT3 came out the first year of the 996. That doesn't make any sense.
I haven't looked it up, but
that doesn't add up.
Normally, you get GT3 your base cars, and then it goes.
So I'm not a Porsche bro. I'm literally reading off Wikipedia. GT3 nameplate was introduced in 1999 as part of the first generation of the Porsche 996 model range, as a homologation model of the cars entered in the FIA GT3 Cup. Metzger engine.
Once we start getting to FIA.
Oh, that was a non-turbo Metzger engine in that thing, I think, right? Because the GT3 had no turbos back then, right? The GT2 had the turbos.
Yeah.
So it's the Metzger motor without the IMS issue, like mine, but without the turbos.
Did you have an IMS issue?
No. I have a turbo. It has the Metzger motor. You can't have IMS. There is no IMS. Only the standard. Here's me hooning the car on the beach. So the other mod I did is I put a roof rack on it, and that's a surf kayak in a surfboard bag and a set of Max Tracks on my Yakima roof rack. And those are PS2 tires. No, full pressure. You can see my GX in the background just in case. But
just in case.
I brought a set of, I never needed it, Max Tracks or a tow strap. I mean, I brought stuff, but like, no, man, I had my niece in the car. She was out visiting from the East Coast. And so yeah, my dad's filming this actually. This is the first time I ever did donuts around somebody. And it was my dad.
That's with
my
so phone. Funny.
Dude, that beach has got some good composition.
It's all wheel drive, but you give it enough. Well, I turned the traction control off. You have to, because otherwise it's too smart. And then you just overpower the all-wheel drive system in sand. It's not hard to like keep everything spinning. So all four tires are spinning. The back ones are just spinning way faster.
Everything's sliding.
Yeah, it was so fun and so controllable, like mental controllable. Like I was having way too much fun. It was like just easy. I was flicking it everywhere. This was all second gear. I think I was second gear, just like just below the rev limiter, and just I'm having 400 plus horsepower on tap, basically spinning tires. Like it was so fun.
You left so much distance between the GX and yourself just in case.
What could possibly go wrong?
Trying to be safe. My daughter, my 6-month-old, was there, like I think breastfeeding with my wife over on the GX. So I was like, keep some distance from that while I have fun in the car.
That's funny. So what else is in your garage? Your fleet.
So the only other vehicle in my garage is a 2006 KTM 950 Adventure. So last year of the carbureted adventure bikes. So fully carbureted, and that thing's tuned to the nines with all the emissions bleep and aftermarket pipes and the Rottweiler kit and that thing's. Mm-hmm. I bought it with most of that stuff, but I've had it tuned and suspension dialed and everything else. It's ready to rip now. I need to go out on another big mission. The other mission, I did a big mission in Idaho with that during the pandemic, but that's really the only trip I've done with that recently. I bought it and 2 weeks later did the I bought it in Maryland. And I drove it 2 weeks later. I took off on a 24 day, 5,000 mile trip solo through the Maritimes in September. So I went Maryland up through the Canadian Maritimes, did the Trans Lab, and then part of the Trans Canada Trail into Quebec. And then I did the Mount Washington hill climb road and then went to Vermont for the Vermont Overland Trophy on my way back. Or not trophy, the rally.
The rally. Yeah. I'm trying I've done to get both to that
a bunch of times.
Year too.
Are they doing that's it again?
A freaking trip. I don't know. I hope so.
The venue's changed ownership hands, and I don't know what's going on with that. I've heard some funny things recently. I'm not positive, but it hasn't happened for a while, and I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to revive it or not.
Another one that popped up kind of on the down low.
Tons of them.
Wow, that's a freaking trip.
But yeah, I did only like one highway on that whole trip, and I did over 3,000 miles off pavement out of 5,000 miles on that trip.
You so carry tubes with you?
Spare tubes? That's a 640 Adventure in the photo that you're showing. That's the bike I had before the 950.
I got to my KTM. I figured I had it.
that KTM 640 Adventure I had just before my 950, and the 640 is awesome off-road and looks way better. I mean, that thing's a like rally machine, but on the pavement, 1 hour only. It had aftermarket seat and suspension and everything, and only 1 hour I could handle. It's non-balanced single cylinder, so it just vibrates the crap out of you. I have a bad back, and that thing's not part of the program. Off-road all day long you're good, but on pavement, so bad.
Okay, I got 950 this time. I got to.
Yeah, so that's part of my Idaho trip. I was near Crater, something of the Moon.
Craters of Idaho the National Monument.
That one, yeah.
Craters of the Moon. Yeah. Reading your hashtag.
Oh yeah, there you go. I geotagged it. There you go. Craters of the Moon National Monument. It was right next to that. It was outside of the park, but there's a two track that kind of goes along it on BLM land. And my buddy Mario Donovan from AT Overland, he was on the other bike, and the two of us were just rallying, like crossing paths and just like two track next to each other through this like crazy terrain. It was sketchy as hell because if we go off the trail, off the two track at all, it was like jagged lava rocks mostly.
But, that would have felt good.
Yeah, it would have been awful, but we were having so much fun. Like it was, I don't even know, it was like 40 or 50 miles of that, like just crushing. Wow. And we were pinned. So we had like three trucks behind us. And like a 200 series, a Tacoma, and a LR3, all built. There's no way. Like we pulled over here and waited for like 25 minutes before they showed up. Like we
were having so much fun. Yeah. You can carry so much speed that trucks just can't.
Yeah, and they were ripping too. But these things, man, we were having fun. It was good.
What kind of? I guess if you had trucks with you, you didn't have to carry that much. But on the long trip, what kind of recovery gear and such you bring like tubes and everything with you? And
yeah, on this trip we were gonna go on our own. That was the plan, just Mario and I, and then we had a couple friends that decided they wanted to come and they don't ride bikes, and we're like, okay, so they sherped all our gear and all our beer. Nice. Which was great. Nice. And cocktail, Mario's amazing cocktail maker, so we had a full-on quiver of there's one of our campsites and the Tacoma that came with it. We had a bunch of tequila, which was good and bad. That campsite was at like 8,000 feet or something too. It was really cool. Outside of Sun Valley, Idaho. It's pretty neat. I always carry Moscow Moto. I got one of their Nomad tank bags, and I have their backcountry bags, side panniers, and a top bag. On this trip, I just used the KTM top case because I wanted a hard case to protect my camera gear because everybody else was sherping everything else. So I'm a photographer, so I shot a bunch of stuff and snacks and some tools. So I carry a small compressor, a Moscow Moto tool roll with a moto specific tools, a small air compressor, some what do you call it? Tire repair plugs, some tire plugs. a tire plug kit. I do carry a tube in it. I have a tubeless setup on the bike, but I have a tube that I carry under the seat in on the bike. And some extra fuses, and I carry an extra fuel. Oh man, what is it? The fuel pump. So on the middle of the translab, it's a known issue on this thing. It's down low, right behind the skid plate, in the front of the motor is the fuel pump, and the, it has dual tanks because it's a rally bike, so it has tanks on both sides. And the fuel pump fails because the connectors get sand and grit and water in them and corrode and go sideways. It's just this shitty, like a bronze loop with two little connectors. And it's horrible. So that fails. It's just a known thing. So in the middle of the translab, that failed on me and I couldn't get the bike running. So at 20 or 30 miles of the translab, I was in the back of some construction worker's truck that they luckily showed up. They wouldn't leave me. I was like, ah, figure it out. Cause they showed up right when I pulled off to the side of the road and they wouldn't leave me out there. Like, dude, no, like you're in the middle of nowhere. Like we're taking you to town. And it was just like to the hydroelectric project and it was snow. So I rebuilt that fuel pump in the parking lot in the snow of like the hotel, restaurant, convenience store, school, general store combo that was the town.
Oh my God.
Where was this?
on the Trans Labrador Highway up in Labrador in Canada. Yeah. I don't remember the name of the town. There's just like five towns along that road or whatever. And they're all hydroelectric projects.
That sounds very Canadian of them to be like, no, we're not leaving you here. Like,
They also know what's out there at night in the cold. So,
It was, I mean, it was snowing. There's a storm front moving in. I was fine until the bike just decided not to work. Like, I coasted off the side of the road. I'm like, what the? And it wouldn't fire back up. So, fuel pump died. But yeah, so I carry I rebuilt. And have like there's an upgrade you can do to fix that, and it's a solid state connector. It's like an aftermarket part. So I had my engineering friend like solder that part on a brand new fuel pump, and I rebuilt the old one, and I carry the old one with me on big trips like that, just in case.
Smart.
But otherwise, yeah, it's good to go. So it's the normal KTM stuff. Like that's a normal thing with the KTMs. But otherwise, it's been good to me. Like I mean, it eats through chains and. It's like 90 plus horsepower stock. So it's a lot. It's a big bike, but it's powerful.
It's healthy.
Yeah.
That experience breaking down in the middle of nowhere sounds like the antithesis of the Land Rover Trek.
That trip was like 24 days of rain, or 23 of my 24 days of pouring rain and cold and snow, and I was just like, I got sick in the middle of it and broke down and had another breakdown with chain issues and everything else. And then there's the Trek competition. So the Trek competition is a one-day scavenger hunt like competition that I did with Jeff, was on my team, and we did it on the Biltmore estate, like amongst the vineyards and the skeet shooting and the amazing property that is the Biltmore estate in Asheville, North Carolina, in brand new like 5 mile Land Rover Defender 110s with the 4-cylinder engines, all built to the nines by Lucky at Off-Road and a bunch of other people that built them up. So one day competition and we won it. We won the media wave. it's mostly for retailers, but
right.
It's mostly 70 dealers. Retail team. Yeah. 70 dealer teams this year. And the biggest ever. And we were the first wave like before them. And we had, I think 17 or 6 teams, but we and beat.
Jeff will be so happy to tell you that you guys beat Lindsey Vonn.
we did beat an Olympian. Yes. We were happy that Land Rover brought in one of their ambassadors, Lindsey Vonn, and stacked her team with an amazing all-female team that was like amazing athletes, super smart, mountaineers and extreme sport athletes and had done rally navigation and everything else. And yeah, we beat them handily, like by a lot. And everybody else by even more, quite honestly. Like their team was the closest to us, and then like third place was way behind that. But yeah, we sort of lucked out, but I don't think so. I think we just worked together really well as a team. And between the three of us, we had the skill sets that they needed for the competition. So we worked really good as a team. We were thrown together. I hadn't met Jeff before that. I think we met at one event, but I didn't really know him. And then Tommy Micah from TFL was on our team as well. And I met him along the way, but we weren't like close friends or anything. So it was awesome just to hop in, and the three of us like got along really well and made it happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Tommy and I running off the start line. Yeah. We beat everybody. We beat everybody down the hill.
That's so funny. You got a camera in hand. Oh man.
Yeah, I mean, that was the stupid part. We didn't know what the program was there, but we had to have our gear. So I had 30, 40 pounds of camera gear on my back and my big camera in my hand.
Did your camera backpack's actually pretty big. Like,
that's a standard Peak Design bag, the day pack. I carry two bodies and three lenses and a water bottle and a jacket. And that's kind of the normal, and some like cleaning supplies and filters. That's kind of the normal package. I carry that around for pretty much everything.
I love that they put you guys in like pennies. Like is anybody else who's going to be at the event? No, guys, the kids.
Well, it denoted the teams and like made it a team because all of them had numbers on them. So like you couldn't swap teams mid thing or whatever. I don't know. It made it kind of team oriented. We had to give those back. We didn't get to keep those.
Are they doing that next year?
They say I don't know. They haven't announced that they are. They tend to do it. I mean, this is only like the fifth or sixth time they've ever done it. And they skipped a year because of the pandemic, but I don't think they're going to do it every year. I think it'll be every other or something like that. They usually do it when there's a new vehicle to launch or every couple of years when they need to like reinvigorate their dealership in terms of skills and lifestyle of the brand. I mean, the whole idea is to ingrain that this is what Land Rover is all about, not always just the super luxury clients. Like, hey, we can use these vehicles. This is what they're for. And kind of make sure that there's at least a couple people at every dealership that have that knowledge and skill set and kind of can talk about that.
Right. Especially if they're selling something like the Defender.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, the opposite of that, right, is like an hour and a half ago or whatever, 2 hours ago now, the embargo was up on the Land Rover SV, or the Range Rover SV, the brand new. So the opposite of the Defender.
Yeah.
So that is the ultra, 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 ultra luxury. I was in LA at the launch of that as well. And holy crap, that thing's beautiful inside and out. Unbelievably nice. The bespoke like custom stuff. They say it's 1.6 million configurations you can do.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's like unlimited paint to sample basically. And like,
and that's how they get
Yeah, well, it is basically.
They're it's taking like in every color options. In existence. They're like, yeah, that's all an option. So,
well, you have like seven wheel options, and then the main 23-inch SV wheel that's really unique and pretty cool. Like, it has accent pieces that can attach to it, and there's like three or four color accents that you can add to the wheel that comes in two or three colors, and then there's seven wheel options. So like it adds up pretty quick as to how you can actually customize it.
40 some
options. Yeah, I'm looking through the release right now. It's absolutely wild.
Yeah, I just finished a story on it. And like I said, I got to crawl around it. There's a walkthrough interior video on my website from LA Auto or on Instagram from the LA Auto Show as well. And yeah, it's unbelievable. It's really cool. I mean, hand laid wood mosaic veneer inside, and the ceramic touch points are amazing. Like that I'm into. Like I would do that on my Porsche or something else. Like I couldn't because the cost to come up to tooling, but right. Like the gear shifter and like the climate control knobs and the control knobs on the seats for the armrest, they're just like the old LR product or like LR3 LR4 products for the adjustment of the armrest. They're all made of ceramic, white or black ceramic, and they feel like ceramic. Like they're awesome. Like they're hard and they're kind of cold, and it's really neat touch that you don't see in any other vehicle.
Yeah, it feels like luxury.
It's totally premium. Like,
yeah, it's always nice when you get in something and the things that look like metal are metal and they feel like metal and they're heavy. So I can definitely see that. You know, they're doing like especially with the Defender and now seeing you know this like. They're really starting to carve out a bit of uniqueness in everything, whereas it just got stale a little bit over time.
There was a little bit in the middle there that it was kind of stale, but I mean, Land Rover's always had its own thing. Like I love Land Rover for what Land Rover is, right? Like the style and the feel of them is really, really cool. Their Range Rover products have gone over the top luxury, and a lot of the Land Rover ones have too. And hardcore off-road people that enjoy that type of thing, like myself, it's kind of hard to choke on, especially at the price point. Like I don't make enough as an automotive journalist to be buying a $80,000 Defender, modify it with $30,000 worth of stuff, and then go actually use it off-road. Like that's not in my budget.
Pay for the fixes after you get the shit out of it. Yeah.
Not an option. I mean, I can buy a, you know, $30,000 Lexus and barely, and then modify it with the help of some friends and industry partners. But yeah, it's all, but yeah, the Range Rover stuff, I'm hoping, I don't know, but I'm hoping that they kind of go downscale a little bit with the Land Rover products and keep going upscale with the Range Rover products. I don't know if that's the case, but the Range Rover stuff has gotten absurdly upscale. Like, I mean, we're talking like that new Range Rover SV, especially the long wheelbase 4-seat option, that is a Maybach Cullinan competitor for sure. I think it's going to come in for less money too, not by a lot, but they haven't announced the pricing yet. We're like a month out on the pricing, I think, but yeah,
difference between 220 and 320, not really going to be make it or break it for anybody who's paying for that.
probably yeah prices of a car. I mean, what average price of any consumer vehicle right now? I think it's what, up to 36 or 38 grand?
No,
I thought it was low 40s.
Last year it was like 41.
I thought purchase, like average of new cars sold, I thought it was like at $36,000 was the average price.
I think
because there's a bazillion cars, like rental and other fleet cars and everything, in that like $22,000 to $28,000 price point that are sold. There's not many options in that price range, but there's a lot of those models sold.
Kelly Blue Book, thanks to Google's very quick response, says Americans paid an average of $46,036 for a new car in October of this year, which was $5,200 more than the prior. So that's what they paid. That's not the average of.
You said 42?
46.
46. So it was 41 last year, what they're saying.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I mean, either way, I thought 37 was high. 36 was high.
So. 37 is
right. Yeah. Like the fact that it's in the low 40s to the mid 40s now. Like,
I mean, you just look at average like income of Americans. Like, how do people afford average car price being 47
84 month loan and huge and
then,
payments,
and then like 20-30% of the population like not working, like on by choice. Like, how does this add up?
I feel like he's watched or listened to our show quite a bit, because that's my thing. Like, how do people buy this shit? Like, I mean, it's my fault, I have extra kids in the house we have to feed, but like, and but like, still, like, I wouldn't go spend that money on.
I'm stretching myself then buying 20-year-old cars, like, at a good deal after researching for a year and a half. And now, like, that's the thing though. Like, both my cars I could sell and make money right now. Like, and my bike, I could probably make money on. Like, I bought the right things because I knew that I bought them at a decent price when the market was okay on them, near the bottom of the depreciation curve, and did the right things to make them more valuable. And then I haven't sold them yet, so I haven't sold at the right time. Because my Porsche, I'm tempted to sell. Like, I think right now it's $14,000 more than when I bought it 8 months ago.
Oh,
value.
That sounds about right.
At a minimum. I think it's probably I could get more out of it. I could put $1,200 in touch up and a couple things to make it like perfect. In terms of paint and looks and wheels and that kind of, like, there's one little nick of clear coat on my wheel.
Think fix all that. Bring a trailer, sweetheart.
100%. Go take real photos, like do full lighting, do the crazy nonsense, bring a trailer photos that don't mean anything. And
dude, good photos matter. Like,
they do, but for me as a buyer, I go on there and the ones that are that artificially photographed, like you can tell they've been touched up and glossed like, I know editing, that's what I do as a photographer. I'm like, okay, that's the exception. Car, but
you can go too far. You're correct.
I want that photo on my wall. Like, that's cool, but that's not the car I'm buying. Like, it's never going to look like that in real life sitting in the driveway.
That's freaking funny.
It's true.
Yeah. I get it. Take a couple flashy photos to get people's attention, but then like give honest photos. Like, hey, here's natural sunlight, and here's the photo of the Nick or the like whatever. Yeah. You know, the leather interior. You're like, yeah, you didn't like soften the crunchy part of the leather or whatever.
Right. Oh
like,
my god.
You're describing a Cars and Bids photo shoot versus a Bring a Trailer photo shoot.
Yep. It matters. So yeah, I've thought about it. I mean, Bring a Trailer or something would be the place to put that car because it's so unique that you got to get it out to a broader audience that has real cash and is like, or, we'll pay a premium on a unique combo.
A place where people know that they can go get Porsches at already.
Right. Well, Bring it's either trailer, there or so. P-Car
market. Exactly. P-car.
It's similar. I think Bring a Trailer is slightly cheaper to as a buyer and a seller, actually. Which is
for P-Car.
Yeah. I gotta look that up. Monday, there will be a large story about online car auctions and the benefits and pros and cons of like six of the major ones on the site that I run as editor-in-chief, autowise.com.
Okay, so
cool.
There'll be a cool story on car auction sites and kind of the cost to sellers and buyers on it.
But that's we'll sweet.
Keep our eyes open for that.
That was leading me to my next question of like, what do you want to plug?
Man, what do I want to plug? Let's see. ExploringElements.com is my website. It's not, it's fully functional, but it's kind of dated at the moment because I haven't, for the last 2 years, I've been a little busy working for everybody else and trying to make a living and pay for my house and my Porsche and my Lexus and my kid. But I freelance for a number of different people. But my day job these days is the editor-in-chief of AutoWise.com and the motors editor at GearJunkie.com. So those are my main everyday jobs. And then I'm also the feature editor at Tread Magazine, the off-road lifestyle mag. I'm the only person to be in every single issue of that magazine. They've gone through three main editors and I've got features in every one. And I've had, well, I don't know, I think close to half the covers. So I do a lot of features in there. And then I write a lot for Diesel World Magazine. I do a big photo shoot after SEMA every year and do feature vehicle shoots for and stories writing for Diesel World. I freelance for a bunch of people in the industry as a marketing consultant, social media manager, photographer. That's about it.
Just, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of everything.
All over.
Photography is my passion. That's what I want to do. I'm trying to get away from the social media management and all the writing. I'm good at writing, but I take too long to make real money at it. I'm a very good photographer at this point in terms of automotive stuff, especially, and action. Action is my thing. So I love getting vehicles moving, or even off-road vehicles, which is tough. You got to use water or dust or mud or something to make it look interesting, moving, just blurred wheels on a straight road. I take that shot, but like usually doesn't work out that well for an off-road vehicle in terms of like, great imagery. Yeah. But, I come from an action sport background. I love whitewater kayaking, skiing, mountain biking, that kind of stuff. And that's what got me into vehicles, was having a vehicle that I could get my gear around and go out to these remote places and do these things, especially whitewater kayaking. So living in a 4x4 van is, I lived on the road for about 8 years full time up till about 3 years ago. Yeah. So I bought a 4x4 van, lived in that for like 4 years, and then built a full custom expedition camper on a Dodge chassis, like full, I built the box. Like full pop top, everything. Lived in that for about 4 years. That's and I met my wife and slowed down a little bit and been living in a couple of various places since then. But, you know, we've done a bunch of travels together too, though. I mean, we even did an overland trip, like a fly-in by to South America. So we did Chile, Argentina over like 2.5 months. We bought a 4Runner down there, had it for 2 weeks and the engine seized. Awesome Toyota reliability. That cost me $8,500 more than I wanted to spend on that trip. But we had a good time. It was worth it. I mean, it's just about getting out there. I mean, I love the photography and the action stuff, and shooting action sports, especially outdoor stuff, is where I come from. So shooting stuff moving is what I just love it. Like athletes, whitewater guys, ski photography I got into for a little while and I still love it, but it's its own little niche. It's really hard to get good photos in wintery conditions and in the snow, but it's a really fun challenge that I enjoy. And sometimes it's like that with cars. I mean, I shoot a lot of cars on dry lake beds and stuff like that. Yeah, you're showing a shot from the Santa Cruz Paddle Fest. I'm the official photographer for that event. I've been going for like 11 years and it's SUPs, wave skis, and surf kayaks. I'm a surf kayak competitor. So I usually, the last couple of times I've gotten a podium in one of the classes for surf kayaking, which is fun. Qualify for the US team a couple of times. But yeah, this is a shot of Zane Zaniac, they call him. He's from the Maui, I believe. And he's a badass big wave surfer, foil surfer, sub stand-up guy. But here's him doing like a pop shove it type thing on a wave at the Steamer Lane in Santa Cruz on a sup board.
It's great.
This is like uncharted territory for my brain here.
Oh yeah, I don't have a clue what's happening in that.
No, it was awesome. But that,
he's insane. I mean, I can't do what he, I mean, I'm not a sup paddler per se. I've taught sup paddling a little bit, but surfing big waves like that on a stand-up paddleboard is those guys have skills.
Yeah, I was just picking cool photography.
Well, you'll see more of Zane, the guy that was just doing that on the sup, because he is the official ambassador for the Fisker Ocean.
Oh, really?
He was at the LA Auto Show with a custom surfboard taking photos and talking up the Fisker Ocean, because he is all about like saving the oceans and pulling fish netting out of the oceans and all that kind of thing, which is part of the Fisker's plan with their interior materials and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's like an official paid ambassador for Fisker.
Wow. That's
symmetry. I wonder if they're hooked up with the guys who are Ocean Cleanup?
There's a bunch of those. I don't know. Zane actually runs one, and he works for some other ones.
There's one that they're based out of Rotterdam, but like they literally have these systems out in the Pacific Ocean, like dredging out plastic. God, what is it called?
I forget the name of the company, but it's basically
it's literally the ocean cleanup.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's perfect.
So yeah, they've got two systems out in the Pacific right now, dredging out microplastics and things like that. And then they were like, they identified like 1,000 rivers in the world, and were like, this is 80% of the plastic pollution in our ocean comes from these 1,000 rivers. So they were like, now we're going to convert
at the mouth of the river.
Yes. So they have, I forget that they call them like System One is the ones that's out in the Pacific. And then they have these interceptors at the mouth of all of these rivers, and you can Google it. Like there's some great installed videos. Those already? They have like 4 of them in installed, okay. not all 1,000, but they've
Wow.
Yeah. But they're,
that would have been quick.
They're solar powered. They're, they're not autonomous, but like it's literally a conveyor belt that's pulling stuff off the surface of the river, but it is
autonomous. That's so cool.
Yeah,
they leave it there.
Well, they leave it, and then when the bins get full, somebody's got to come out, empty the bins, put new bins in. But
the process is autonomous.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it's just a conveyor belt that's dredging stuff out of the river constantly.
That's so cool.
Yeah. They've made a bunch of YouTube videos. You can lose hours, and at the end of it, you kind of feel better.
Then they have succeeded.
Yeah. Until the
story hopefully they do some real good, because that's a mess right now. That's a serious problem.
That's a problem.
Some interior materials in a battery electric EV is not going to help that situation. It's not going to put a dent in that situation.
No, that's not even a band-aid.
1%.
Yeah. That's not solving things. That's mildly mitigating the byproduct of things.
You're not even scratching the surface. It's good marketing, and why not? It's better than not, right?
Yeah,
like that's the reality of it. It's better than making new plastics to do it if you can do it, right? Exactly. There's plenty of plastic in the world. Let's use what we got if it's efficient to do so, because that's the other problem, is making too many hydrocarbons, producing or refining the busted plastic to reuse it versus building new. Because right now that line is like, depends on how it's done. It's sometimes just better for the world to make new plastic than it is to refine the old stuff.
It's like my local municipality does not accept plastic. They'll do cardboard. They'll do aluminum. They don't want it because of what he just said. It's
expensive to process.
Yes. Yeah.
You're better off throwing it in the trash. So.
Crazy.
Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up real fast. So you can rate and review the show wherever you listen to the show. Do me a favor. Review it there. I normally say iTunes, but we need other. I know that we're on all of the platforms. I see that people are listening on all of the platforms. Review us there. Help us out. You can like and subscribe on YouTube still. It's hilarious if you do. I love it. Thank you. You can follow Brian at Explore Elements on Instagram. The E of Explore and the first E of Elements is the same E. So don't do Explore with Elements with two E's.
If you look up Exploring Elements, it comes up now on Instagram. But yeah, there's only one E in the middle because of the length restrictions on Instagram of the word. And or under my name, Brian Dorr, but it's spelled weird, BryonDorr. So both are spelled weird. If you spell it completely wrong, the worst way possible you can think of, you probably got it right.
Yeah, that'll make sense.
Everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Exactly. You can follow Hooniverse, the Hooniverse on Twitter, the Real Hooniverse on Instagram. You can read what we write on Hooniverse, UTV Driver, ATV Writer, and Everyday Driver again. I only write on Hooniverse.
Hooniverse is the only one that I haven't really been writing on, in fairness.
I actually did write something. I didn't talk about it earlier, but I guess I hadn't written about the Suburban at all. The fact that we bought a new Suburban. And so I started to write about our long trip, and then I kind of went back through the summer and chronicled where we've been with it. Anyway, so that's up on Hooniverse right now. You can, I think I called it the Dad Bourbon.
Dad Bourbon.
Which, you know, the best part about that, no one has actually used that hashtag before, because I searched the hashtag on Google and the only thing that came up were my two Instagram posts.
That's is yours.
Yeah.
It's not the overused family truckster.
Yeah.
Right. Or so I had a 94 Land Cruiser, which it was my uncle's previously. He's a big boat guy, so he always referred to it as his land yacht. And so that's like it had, since I was a kid, I can remember the personalized plate. So when I got it, I just transferred it to my state and did the same thing. That hashtag is not only Land Cruisers. Like it is everything. So Dad Bourbon's mine. I claimed it. My posts were up first. Rest of you, anybody try to steal it, you suck. follow Ross at No Not Like the One from Friends. So if his Exploring Elements was character limited, how do you get away with that?
How long ago did you make?
They've changed it, and that's the problem. Why. So yeah, because I now own Exploring Elements fully out as well. But I secured it because I was worried about that. But I started this Instagram account, I think, in 2012.
Okay.
2013, right in there. So yeah.
Who knows?
That sounds about the right time for the.
It was limited Instagram at the time. Yeah, and I know they changed. I mean, there was no reels, there was no stories. There was none of this. Right.
Oh, so much nonsense.
Oh yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, again, it's been a while since we haven't stuck the landing, but that's a show. We did it.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's good fun.
Yeah, man. Thanks for joining us. Thanks
so much for coming.